the following contains strong language and adult content. We tried to tell our hosts that they'll be talking about manga targeted at Japanese teenage boys, but they demanded access to what they call fuck words. So, here we are. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Shonen Fiasco Show, the number one book club for the self-loathing weeb. I am your scumbag, edgy, cool guy host, Adam Tetramore.
And I'm riding into the danger zone, your co-host, Alex Hill.
Yeah, we're a biker gang now. We you know what? Manga, that's for nerds. We don't do that now. We're way, way too grown up for that. So, sorry y'all, we're talking about bikes now?
Yep.
And large wheels.
And the ponytails I bought. And the leather jacket.
You,
I'm going the all ponytails in you bought? For this. Yeah, they actually buy ponytails. Like, for the biker dudes.
Stop trying to, like, we're trying to do a bit here, and you're coming at me with these uncanny valley of truth type things, where I'm like, is that true? Like, I could Google that. God damn it.
They gotta look
all right,
the part.
Well, I don't want to be a biker
anymore.
It's
cosplay. It's like burly dude cosplay. You gotta
get really
the part, the Harley Davidson.
Oh man, I don't want to be a biker anymore. I'm back to my manga phase. And hold on, stop. I hear the sounds of the beach.
Oh no, is it coming through?
Coming from your end of the recording, Alex.
Is it coming through that loud?
Yeah, it's coming in pretty loud. Damn the sound of relaxation and sun and good times. The fuck is that doing over there?
Well, you see here.
Where exactly are you?
We are in the Panhandle in Florida, so. It would be all that if in the 13 hours it took to drive down here, a hurricane didn't form in the middle of the Gulf.
Serves you. Well,
so,
okay,
so this is the podcast. Your co-host Alex Hill coming here from the middle of a hurricane. Shout outs to Sally.
Are you doing this like a weather report?
That's right.
Just like, I'm here trying to talk about canceled manga. Just blown away.
I can't ghostwrite myself out of this one.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm glad you're safe-ish. Are you safe-ish? I guess I should have asked if you're safe-ish.
I hope so. I mean, we'll find out. I mean, it's like going, it's barreling through. It looks like it was going to go pretty farther west than where we were. But then it started turning east, and I get more nervous and more nervous. And so, yeah, this might be the last. I might have to record one last thing, you know, that we add at the very end as the sea swipes beside.
No, we're not doing that. That's dead air. That's literally dead air. Okay. I'm not adding that. Anything else to report? Because you didn't show me images of you getting blown away by a hurricane. You decided to share with me you on the beach with your boo, hanging out in the sand and getting a tan and these, like, social distance beach.
I mean, granted, there was, like, maybe 2 hours where it was, like, sunny or chill. But in between the storms when it was first, like, starting, like, some of the outer bands wrapping around, where we were like, oh, wow, the sun peaked out a little bit, so we'd go down, and everyone who was already on the beach all left. So it was just us and that other couple, and eventually we got to pet a dog that looked like Ayn from Cowboy Bebop. It made my day.
Oh, well, it was worth the hurricane then, wasn't it?
To pet Ayn? Absolutely.
Good for you. That's bringing me back to the point I'm making. You are not allowed to have fun. I work too damn hard for me to not at least have a beach day. I don't even know if I want a beach day at this point. I don't know if there's an appropriate vacation spot for our... Oh, hi, doggy.
See, Bear wants a beach episode too.
Bear does want to be a beach episode. I'll tell you what Bear wants to do. Bear wants to be a podcaster because not too long ago, I actually showed up for a guest spot for our good friends over at the Shonen Flop podcast.
Hey.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And Bear decided to make a big appearance, like, frequently there, which, here's the deal. It's the relationship with the Shonen Flop podcast, it is a rivalry. It is very much a, hey, let's help each other out, and I appreciate the existence of them and whatnot. But there's a certain level of, like, serotonin I'm getting from the idea of their audio production guy having to, like, edit out barks and shit and having to spend
all night
doing that. I got a small feeling like, ooh, oh.
Are we the baddies in this, like, Shonen Flop, Shonen Fiasco manga?
No, we're just the asshole rival.
We're
That's
Gary.
Okay.
We're Gary Oak.
We're Gary, we're Bakugo, we're Sasuke, name them, I don't care.
What manga did y'all go over? Can we get a sneak peek?
We talked about Mashle. And I don't know if you've read Mashle, but it is in the Shonen Jump app, so you do have access to it. It's fine. It's weird because, man, they brought me on. They were like, man, this is such a good manga. And I'm like, it's fine. I think it threw off the whole jive.
You just show up.
They said multiple times, we're supposed to be recommending this. I'm like, no, it's okay. So I was basically like King Downer over there, which I guess for their listeners, it'll be a refreshing opportunity for them to have a podcast host that has taste. So that relationship is ruined. That bridge is burned. We can go ahead and start.
We love you, Shonen Flop.
No, we do love you. Check out that episode. Check out their podcast. They were on here before. Yeah. And that was one of my favorite episodes, Zipman episode. So, no, check out Shonen Flop when you can. We'll get the shout-outs early. But before you do that, you got to listen to this one, the Shonen Fiasco Show, where we talk about manga and Shonen Jump that failed to reach 50 chapters. And for episode 6, we have probably the most popular manga within that small little subset of manga.
Oh, yeah. I saw this on Twitter a lot. Before we talked about this was going to be the one that we were going over for the episode, you know, on Twitter, I just saw people just super, super upset that this was canceled. So going into this, I was very excited to see why.
Well, with that very aggressive cold open out of the way, I guess we can go ahead and get to the pitch. On a cold and stormy night, a struggling mangaka decides to give up on his dream. But lightning strikes, and now he has an issue of Shonen Jump from the future. Teppei Sasaki is a passionate rookie manga artist who dreams of getting a series in Weekly Shonen Jump. One day, he gets a copy of Jump from 10 years in the future. Is it all a coincidence, or is it fate? Whatever the case, destiny is about to change. Time warps, destinies intersected for a tomorrow that was never meant to be. The future of Jump is here! With writing by Kenji Ichima and art by Tsunehiro Date, this is Time Paradox Ghost Rider.
Down the coolest name of a show we've covered so far.
I can agree with that.
Like, this one catches you in real quick.
Is this a pitch that you're like, ooh, okay, yeah, I'll read this manga?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because I don't think I would usually pick up a manga that's like this self-aware of like an industry. I don't know if it's just really my kind of thing. You know, from those who listen to Zipman, that's kind of, I like more like crazy actiony Zipman. You know,
you like punches.
Yeah, I like a Falcon Punch, but this is really cool, and that kind of pitch really hooked me in real quick.
I feel the same way. I am actually a huge fan of the very surreal, either sci-fi or horror type of storytelling that Shonen Jump will do, with stuff like Promised Neverland, with Death Note,
yes,
with a lot of stories that aren't battle-centric. They're very much suspense and intrigue and mystery. And I thought this was going to be that, but with the caveat of, like, let's learn about Shonen Jump, which it's kind of in my wheelhouse. Yeah. I'm all about just learning about this freaking publication.
That was the impression that I got as well.
Time Paradox Ghost Rider ran in Weekly Shonen Jump from May 18th to August 31st of 2020. The series ran for 14 chapters and 2 volumes. You can find the series in its entirety on the Shonen Jump app. This is the Shonen Jump debut for writer Kenji Ichima. You can find his previous work in the Shogakukan published series Bokura no Q. Artist Tsunehiro Date, on the other hand, has appeared in Jump multiple times through one-shots and series such as Cross Account and Tokyo Wonder Boys. This is a series about a struggling manga writer, so you kind of have to have a closer lens at, like, you know, what's the experience of this guy?
I feel like this one, more so than the others, is very personal.
Our story starts with the hand of our protagonist, 24-year-old Teppei Sasaki, grasping at a star-shaped balloon from atop a tree. The young man proclaims joyous victory as he grabs hold of the string, just before falling into some bushes and promptly eating shit. The entire sequence acts as a metaphor for Sasaki's life up to this point. For you see, our hero just so happens to be a struggling mangaka with dreams of reaching for the stars and being serialized in the most popular manga publication in the world, Weekly Shonen Jump.
All right.
The author is writing what he knows.
Yeah, absolutely.
After returning the balloon to a grateful mother and child, the chipper young artist hastily makes his way to a meeting at the Shueisha HQ. We then cut to the bustling offices of the Weekly Shonen Jump editorial department. Sasaki looks on nervously as his editor, a man by the name of Kikuse, skims through his newly submitted storyboard. We get a quick explanation of the process behind getting published in Jump. It's a somewhat convoluted process, but in short, you need to write good manga. You, send it to an editor, and the editor sends it to a boss, and the boss sends it to his boss, and his boss decides, yes, this is good enough to send in front of, you know, two media hack podcasters for them to critique on their fledgling product. This is the one. This is going to do it for them. The only problem is that Sasaki's storyboards have been getting rejected by Kikuse for years now. And today is no different, as Kikuse gives a scathing review of the newest submission. "This sucks," the editor says in what is already an extremely mimetic panel. "It's terrible."
That is all it takes to have a manga be shut down? And no one did that to Tokyo Shinobi Squad?
Not a single soul.
It went all the way up the ladder? That many steps? They all read it and were like, huh, okay. No!
I didn't think about it that way, because I looked at it, listen, I looked at it a glass half full area of like, man, it's really hard to get into Shonen Jump, and some of these series, they're really good and they got canceled and that sucks, but hey, they got to go through the process and like see the promised land for at least a little bit. But you're looking at it as, how in the fuck did these bad manga get this far?
Yeah, I mean, with all the other ones we've reviewed, I can see why an initial reading that it would get through, except for Tokyo Shinobi Squad, but I just don't see it.
Kikuse dismisses Sasaki's stories as being too normal and cuts the meeting short. But Sasaki insists that he be given one more chance to pitch a one-shot before tomorrow's series selection deadline. The editor seems skeptical, but is willing to give Sasaki one more shot at publication. After pulling an all-nighter, a physically and emotionally drained Sasaki barely arrives at his second meeting on time. Kikuse takes his time reading through the submission, but it does very little to change his opinion. It's another rejection, and a brutal one at that. Kikuse feels that the best thing for Sasaki is to call it quits as a mangaka.
Whew.
First off, our pro tag. He has good intentions, but kind of sucks.
Yeah.
He's very much somebody that's just, you know, an idealist and a romanticist about, oh, being a Shonen Jump manga author would be a dream come true. And then the reality is that, dude, you're not that good.
Poor thing.
Oh, and also there's the one line in here near the end where they're discussing, like, how can Sasaki make a more marketable piece of manga for Jump? And Kikuse is like, you got to write something like cultish and weird and like Chainsaw Man-y, where it's not going to be the biggest hit, but you'll have a cult following at the very least. And we get a glimpse at Sasaki's idea of what is a good manga, which is, I want to write something that is universally loved. And Kikuse comes in with the, dude, if you want to get praised for the stuff you write, just go home and show it to your mom. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like, jeez.
Ah, that hurts. You ever get told that? Have you ever been told as a musician something that brutal?
I have not, but I have heard horror stories from friends, and it's awful.
A completely dejected Sasaki walks home in the rain and collapses in the doorway of his apartment. He thinks back on the nearly 5 years of work he's put into this dream, his early successes and his lasting failures. If I open my mouth and the words "I quit" come out, then I'll quit, he tells himself, lying in the rain. However, just as the words in his mouth start to form, a lightning bolt strikes his apartment and startles Sasaki back to his feet. As he looks around, he notices that a part of his kitchen has caught on fire. Oh no!
Uh-oh.
A frantic Sasaki quickly puts the fire out, only to find that his refrigerator, microwave, and a toy robot atop the pile have melted and merged together into a burnt amalgam of electronics. And yet, despite the state of these appliances, Sasaki is shocked to hear a loud ding from the microwave.
That sounds about right. That sounds like the state of my fridge for the past 2 months before our landlord decided to replace it.
It sounds like, why didn't I get a time machine with this at the very least?
Our shit
like,
was fucked up for 2 months and we didn't get any cool mechanism that still dings. Like, all we got was a broken fridge and freezer.
Upon tentative examination, Sasaki finds an issue of Weekly Shonen Jump within the amalgam. But not just any issue. This issue is dated for release 10 years in the future. Sasaki can't even begin to fathom what he's reading as he browses through an issue of Jump filled completely with unrecognizable manga. But one chapter in particular captures his attention the most. The debut chapter of an action series called White Knight. Upon reading the debut, Sasaki nearly breaks down in tears over just how good it is. But before he can give it a reread, the issue seemingly disappears. Sasaki eventually comes to the conclusion that the strange series of events were just hallucinations spurred on by a lack of sleep, which means that White Knight is an idea of his own mind. Ooh, nice. That's not... Man.
He did look at it, and it did have a name that wasn't his name.
I'm going to go with the assumption that it is a hallucination, because I want to take credit for it. Here's something I have to say about this White Knight series. It's basically a plot element that shows up a lot in this series is this perfect, beautiful future manga called White Knight. Here's the thing. We don't actually see White Knight. It actually doesn't do what Bakuman does, because Bakuman's interesting in the sense of it's a series about manga authors, and we get to see, like, at least a blip of the opening chapters and, like, the distinct art and the weird style of these different manga. So, like, they feel like they are really ingrained in the world. White Knight is very much something where we're told it's the greatest. It's really good. It's just God.
Just trust me, man.
Just trust me. And everyone reacts to it and like, oh, my God. Fuck. Shit. Oh, God. It's good.
I mean, isn't there also a Jack Black song about this where, like, it's like the greatest song in the world, but he couldn't remember it?
That's what
so
it is.
So this is the tribute it's song?
The greatest manga in the world. You don't have to tape a word on it.
10 years in the future, it has to be good.
Yeah, that's another assumption, is that manga will be better 10 years in the future.
There's a bigger assumption than that. There's an assumption that there is a 2030 where we all exist after what was going on in 2020. That is the biggest buy-in to this manga that they're writing
your
in
Jets
2020.
Time travel. I'm going to travel to 2100. I'm Doctor Who. Like, oh, 2100? You're going to, like, a flat plane of just craters. Yeah. All right? Like, the Flat Earth militia finally got nukes and acquired the means to literally make the Earth flat through just pounding on the surface a lot.
The Earth flat. I just see it like, if they won't believe that the Earth flat, I'm going to have to make it flat through nukes.
Sasaki desperately spends the rest of the night recreating the opening chapter from memory to submit as a post-deadline Hail Mary storyboard. Never a good idea.
Yeah, it didn't sound like a good idea.
The next morning, Sasaki asks for one more meeting with Kakusei, only to be rejected over the phone without even getting a reading. This doesn't stop Sasaki, however, as he proceeds to make a mad dash for the editorial offices of Jump. Sasaki, calling his new story a miracle, begs Kakusei to give him one more chance, but Kakusei has had enough. The editor smacks the storyboards out of Sasaki's hands and rips into the poor guy, calling him a talentless hack. You're poopy. You're poopy, ow. Manga poopy man.
Ow.
Yeah.
This
stop
is special.
It.
I had
no
dream. Manga dream.
Slap that out of your hand. You're poopy man now.
I guess I'll make my manga about that.
Just write what you know. I got called a poopy man. Welcome to poopy, the sequel to Zip Man, Poopy Man.
No.
You want to make a poopy man bit? You want to reach for that lowbrow audience that, like, let's do improv for poopy man?
We're not game grumps. What are you talking about?
As the editor berates Sasaki, a kind-looking gentleman, who we learn is the editor-in-chief of Jump, begins to pick up the scattered pages of the storyboard. He calmly admonishes both Kakusei for being so arrogant as to assume the quality of a manga before reading it, and Sasaki for the slightly more serious crime of trespassing on private property.
Wow, the editor-in-chief in Shonen Jump? Such a nice guy.
That's a pretty smart way to get your shit published, to be like, and there's this character,
sweet,
he's the editor-in-chief of Shonen Jump. I don't know if you know of him. And he's just such a cool, well-respected guy and gives opportunities to all struggling manga artists.
Remember,
don't you like this character? In order to make a living, I'm going to have to somehow make these podcasts have a section where we're just like, oh, and in this part of the story, I don't know how it snuck in here, but Raid Shadow Legends shows up and punches the shit out of the villain. And is, whoa, it's like such a cool fight scene, though. Wow.
Oh, my God.
Sasaki apologizes for his behavior and chokes back tears as he begs for one final chance. He either gets a one-shot published in the next special issue, or there's no point in trying for tomorrow. After collecting the pages, the editor-in-chief proceeds to read through the storyboard, and after a tense silence, he gives his thoughts. White Knight won't be getting a one-shot in the special issue, because it's far too astonishing for that. As far as the chief is concerned, this series needs to be serialized immediately!
I like how the main character is like, you know, he's bringing the manga of his dreams, and then here in real life, our author is bringing the manga of his wet dreams.
The entire editorial office, including Sasaki and Kikuse, are shocked by the response, as each editor begins clamoring to read the storyboard, with each of them falling in love on the spot. With that, Sasaki finally cements himself as a real mangaka for Shonen Jump. The editor-in-chief offers Sasaki time to finalize the chapter, as well as a new editor to work under by the name of Mune Oka, because fuck you, Kikuse, you had your chance, you blew it. You had it, and you suck now. You're not fired, but we hate you. Sasaki decides to travel back to his hometown so that he can get his old high school friends to help out with the backgrounds and screen tones. And before he even returns to Tokyo, Sasaki learns that White Knight's debut is a massive success in the readers' polls. The new star mangaka of Jump celebrates with his friends and family, but does so without realizing that back in his apartment, the microwave is still materializing issues of Shonen Jump from the future. We then cut to somewhere in the countryside. A young girl by the name of Itsuki Aino, surrounded by volumes of Shonen Jump, reads through the latest issue in shock. "What is my White Knight doing in Shonen Jump?" the girl asks to herself. She reads aloud the name of the author credited for the series that she has been working on for years. Tepe Sasaki.
Uh-oh.
You fucked up. You really bunced it. Here's a fun fact about this series. In the rumor mill, one idea behind why this series was canceled is on Japanese Twitter, a lot of people took issue with having the protagonist of a Shonen Jump series be someone that plagiarizes manga. And I don't think they're glorifying it. Like, he's stupid. We have a dumb idiot protagonist, and that's just where we're at.
I don't really get why it would be an issue for this to be the protagonist, because this could be written in such a way to really make a commentary of like, oh, I fucked up, and whether it was on accident or on purpose, now, like, this is how you apologize and all stuff. There's opportunity for growth in this story.
Eventually, Sasaki returns to his apartment to find that the microwave is still printing out issues of Jump from the future. With this new information, Sasaki realizes that he's, in fact, not a miracle genius mangaka, but rather a plagiarizing dipshit. Fuck. He realizes, like, I suck. I'm actually stupid. And now we get, like, a bunch of chapters in which he tries to unfuck it. To his credit, Sasaki's first thought is to destroy the time machine and refuse the offer of a serialization with Jump. But after a meeting with the new editor, Muneoka, Sasaki is convinced that it's too late to go back and that he would be robbing the world of a masterpiece if he didn't draw it now. So now we're getting into the realm of, ooh, that is very morally gray. But it actually, I think it is an interesting discussion.
It is.
If you are the only way that this series gets printed, do you still print the series? Like, do you still give that to the world if it's a good enough piece, even if it's an outright copy? I guess, like, the idea is, like, God, you know, I guess the thing you should do is just say, hey, check out my fucking time machine and just right. Go from there. that's kind of the biggest plot hole with the series. It's like, how do I get around the fact that I need to print the series because it's so good, the world needs to see it, but I shouldn't take credit for it. I would feel bad if I did. It's like, okay, show the time machine.
Yeah.
It's in your apartment. It works just fine. It's actually, if you, like I said, if you want to take the screws to the series, this thing falls apart quickly.
It does, yeah. But yeah, no, if we're just going to, you know, put that aside and just kind of buy into it, the base of this argument is whether you intended to or not, you made a decision that has altered time. And now the only way the story will come out in this particular timeline is if you do it. Yep. But it's not your story to tell. You're still plagiarizing. And that sort of moral dilemma I thought was really cool.
It, you know, adds an extra caveat to that discussion that would never happen. It's completely fantastical.
Right.
But that's what makes it interesting is that, you know, in this universe, it's happening. So what do we do? How do we solve it? Sasaki commits himself to sharing White Knight with the world, regardless of the consequences. However, the most immediate consequence is the sudden appearance of Itsuki Aino. Sasaki nearly shits himself on the spot after realizing who she is. And things only get worse when Aino mounts Sasaki while clutching a very sharp pen.
And it's hilarious. Scene.
I love that. Okay, we have a scene here in which we have this girl grabbing a pen and in a stabbing posture. And in the middle of this sequence, we break off to get lore on what a G-pen is.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, thanks.
It's like, what? Oh, it's a G-pen. Every so often, this series wants to remind you that you're supposed to be learning about manga, but it does so at, like, the weirdest opportunities.
Yeah, you know? I was like, I don't need to know this right now. It looks sharp.
Knowledge on a G-pen is really relevant to the immediate stakes of, I'm about to be stabbed by a teenage girl. Sasaki tries to explain himself, going so far as to admit that he used a time machine to plagiarize Aino's work. Cementing that, like, this is something that he could just tell people. But Aino doesn't want to hear any of that bullshit. She already knows why he ended up writing White Knight. It's because, as a writer, he's just like her. Empty and bland, but with a strong desire to write something that the entire world can enjoy.
Cute?
I mean, it is very cute. It's actually very adorable. Aino is a sweet little character.
Yeah, I
just
love her.
Just doing her best. It turns out Aino just wanted to meet Sasaki as a fan, much to Sasaki's confusion. Aino also came to Tokyo to make her intentions clear to the man she now considers a rival. One day, the young girl proclaims, I'm going to make a manga one quintillion times better than White Knight. A few days after the run-in with Aino, we are then introduced to Sasaki's new assistants, a quirky cast of characters who, for all intents and purposes, only really matter for 2.5 chapters.
Yeah. None of them other than Aino matter, so it's not even worth it.
They're fine, but whatever. Oh, and also Itsuki Aino, I'm glad you brought that up, who will now be working on the background art of her own series from the future.
I like that. That is a mechanic, it got me. I mean, it's a little expected, but at the same time, I still got a good giggle out of it when she shows up.
It's certainly an awkward situation for Sasaki, who feels obligated to just hand the series over to Aino, but after some thinking, Sasaki concludes that imitating Aino's art as best he can is the safest option to ensure that people can enjoy White Knight to the fullest.
This doubling plan, down on plagiarism? That's the answer?
We're just going to go straight to tracing. Like, man, they really do lean in.
Oh,
like,
my
God,
gosh.
Plagiarizing, it's the only way out of this.
This is fair use. This is the Shonen's Fiascos show. And
the
we
Shonen's
do manga that shows. Is canceled in 51.
Listen, the fact is, this actually did happen
this
to
actually
us.
We actually have to
mention the fact that, like, we did have a podcast that we were working on, and then it got sniped accidentally, and we're out here just like, well, that's just something that happens. Like, you know what? I think that's why I like Aino so much, is I sympathize with her. I don't want to go straight to the idea of that shit was just copied off. God damn you, Shonen Flop.
This series hits way too hard
considering that it actually happened to us. It really fucking did. I made a fucking logo.
You did.
With the goddamn name.
Made the logo.
And then we see in like, what, 2 weeks before we air, it's just like, let's do a quick cursory search for Shonen Flop one more time. Oh, no.
Uh-oh. I was thinking about this whole time. Like, I was like, you know, there's some funny parallels here.
Because we could have had one of them guest host for this particular episode, and the entire 60-minute runtime would just be us going, wow, oh, a weird thing to happen where this guy gets a time machine and just steals ideas that, you know, people are working hard on at the moment. They just needed more time to get there. Huh.
Our friends from the Shonen Flop podcast are all sitting over there like, I can't let them know that when I open my freezer, it just starts playing Spotify episodes.
Yes. Please be sure to listen to the Shonen Flop podcast. They are good friends of ours.
They're wonderful.
This is a bit. This plan of replicating Aino's work doesn't really work out that well for a hero, as he soon realizes that replicating Aino's drawings, even by tracing over them, gives off a slightly fraudulent feel to what is otherwise great art. As the deadline for the first chapter looms closer, Sasaki continuously insists on redrawing the initial draft, putting Munioka and the assistants on edge as Sasaki pushes his body to the limit with multiple all-nighters. Eventually, after an emotional conversation with Aino, Sasaki realizes that he needs to be drawing his White Knight and stop worrying so much about replicating Aino's work. The combination of White Knight's story with Sasaki's art turns out to be a perfect match. And with that, White Knight finally begins its serialization in Jump. There's a bit of a redemption in which, like, you know, you don't have to just straight up plagiarize and replicate this art. I guess if you're going to freaking plagiarize it, at least contribute something. Have a voice attached to it so that it's not as terrible. Maybe it's still terrible because now you're just trying to force your voice onto something that's not yours.
He's still telling a story that's not his. And he's still doing artwork that is not his. And at this point, yes, you need to do something to contribute to it, make it your own. But, like, you know, if it just up and fails, like, that's all fucking you, buddy. Then you're just an asshole.
It's actually really weird to have a series in which the protagonist seems to always make decisions that are hard decisions. Like, that's interesting. But in Shonen Jump, I'm so used to having characters that always make the right decisions that I could see why readers could be thrown for a loop when they have a character that honestly makes decisions that you could see as, you could argue as, like, worse. And those decisions keep getting worse over and over again.
All these are pretty morally gray. I mean, like, there's some pretty harsh consequences with either decision, depending on how you want to look at it.
Honestly, this series, it's going to be weird. I don't even know if I can make this reference. This has a lot more in common with Scott Pilgrim than it does with anything Shonen Jump does.
Oh.
In the sense of completely relying on how shitty, with good intentions, but overall shitty, your protagonist is.
Oh.
You don't see that in Shonen Jump, but I think it is something that, this is a series that did really good numbers in the West, because I think we are more open to having extremely flawed protagonists, especially in our comics and in our media. Maybe that's where the divide is having a protagonist that is flawed in a publication that usually prides itself on having protagonists that always do the right thing.
I absolutely can see the parallels and the draw between the Eastern and Western audiences using Scott Pilgrim as an example. Because, you know, Scott Pilgrim is an asshole. He made decisions that were bad, and then he made other decisions that were either morally gray or made things worse. But then the ability for a redemption arc is really what sells it later on and how he interacts with his characters later on. And I think that's probably, at least for me, that's what really drew me into this at first when they started pulling in with plagiarism. I thought, you know, if he's going to fuck up real hard, I hope there's a way that he somehow redeems himself.
From here, Sasaki, Aino, and the gang of assistants relish in White Knight's success. Within the span of 8 months, the series receives a sold-out run of volumes and even the green light for an anime adaptation. In that same time frame, Aino is quickly improving her skills and winning awards for her rookie manga submissions. Things are looking up for Sasaki overall. That is, until 1 week, when the time machine fails to materialize an issue of Jump for the very first time. Sasaki begins to panic, thinking about how he's going to be able to continue White Knight. The very next week, though, he's relieved to find a new volume of Jump in the microwave. What a sentence, Jesus. But horror quickly replaces that levity when he finds what's inside. a memoriam for the now deceased author, Itsuki Aino.
Ooh.
Now, this is where I go from, it's fun, it's an interesting premise, but I don't know where the legs are. I don't think I'm invested.
Right.
The second they put these stakes in, I'm like, I get it. Now I can fully support the protagonist.
When I got to this part, so I was reading this while also deafened and stuff in Discord, and I undeafened to tell everyone about what I have read thus far because wow. I was so hype for it because it's such a wacky premise. And then, you know, I'm like, where's this going to go? Like, where's the meat and potatoes of, like, the push and pull of, like, what's going to make me feel? What's going to make me get stressed? And then when they drop this giant bomb that the manga is incomplete and she's fucking dead 10 years from now, I was like, that is amazing. Like, you now, if you are our main character, if you are Sasaki right now, you are sitting here with the information that she dies in some way. And as of chapter 6, you do not know how. You do not know why. You're basically left with two thoughts. One thought is that she dies, but you don't know what happened to her or anything like that. And then also, professionally, the manga stops. You got to keep going somehow. Some way.
Yeah.
And it
would like, be... how do you write a manga? Like, you copied all the way through, and now you have to basically place yourself in and make it feel like a natural progression of events. I think that's a really, really interesting task to give a character. Chapter 7 is when the series turns on, and now I'm excited for every single chapter that comes because I love the mystery. This is such a cool setup.
Yeah, it really opens up.
That takes us to the second half of the series, the anima arc, chapters 7 through 14. Sasaki is devastated to learn that Aino dies young in the future, but then realizes how much his timeline has changed from the timeline he's getting issues of Jump from, and how likely it is that he's already changed Aino's fate. Perhaps that's the reason for the future issues of Jump in the first place, to prevent Aino's tragedy. As he contemplates whether he's truly done enough to prevent Aino's death, the time machine responds by spewing out electricity and iron sand. When the bolts of lightning calm down, Sasaki finds that his fridge now has a message on it, demanding that Sasaki continue working on White Knight in order to eliminate the origin of death. Aino will start a new series soon, the time machine spells out. You must beat Itsuki. Your defeat means her death. Before Sasaki can ask more questions, the time machine shuts down, leaving him all on his own. With the stakes higher than ever, Sasaki places himself at his writing table and gets to work, breaking the skin of his finger as he bites down, thinking about how he's going to continue White Knight and save Aino's life.
Okay, so I was so hyped about the end of chapter 6, but as soon as we start chapter 7... in the microwave, sort of deus ex machina's the rest of the plot and the direction, this turned me off immediately. I did not want him to know what was going on. I wanted him to find this out and maybe, like, maybe even just like a time loop or something like that. Or at least, you know, maybe through the microwave he gets something else other than the manga to piece it together. But the fact that the microwave just tells him what to do, and it tells him, like, you have to do this to stop her origin of death. I don't know. It takes away from the purpose of it, the mystery of it.
No, you're not wrong at all, because I understand what you mean. It is so frustrating to have a mystery set up so well with a lot of questions that need to get answered, only for the next, like, 3 or 4 chapters to start answering those questions. Now, keep in mind, this is because we are now in the, I got canceled time frame. We are now in the panel of like, oh shit, I was trying to do something interesting, but now I gotta resolve it. So I really hope it isn't the case, but this could have been an instance of, well, I tried to save this manga with these poor reader poll results by adding an element of mystery, but it's come, you know, too little too late. And now I've set up a mystery subplot with this series and I have to resolve it in a short amount of time, which will... there's no way you make that satisfying. I don't see that as the writer's incompetent about writing a mystery. I see that as the writer being given like the worst freaking hand possible and trying to salvage what he can out of a mystery series that has to be resolved in too little amount of time.
Yeah, I can see that.
One thing I will say in defense of this, you know, shift in tone, like, yes, the mystery elements are kind of sped through, especially in this later half of the series. But there are a lot of depictions of Sasaki after getting this news of just like sunken eyes, just kind of looking at like, how do I make this manga better? How do I make this manga better?
Yeah.
I love that depiction. When you are given extra stakes onto a series, and the stakes in this series is somebody's life, but they can be something like, you know, you are financially depending on this creative endeavor. You can often fall into the trap of, I need to be better, because if I don't, something terrible happens. And it fucks with the art. It fucks with your ability to create. That is what I enjoy most out of this second half, is exploring, like, when writing and creating no longer becomes fun because there's too much bullshit attached to it, what does that do to a person? Like, how does that break people down? And that's we fair. Get to see two examples of that for Sasaki, and we get to see it for Aino, and both depictions of it, as condensed and short as they are, I think are very, very compelling.
Absolutely.
Right, so half a year passes. And just as the prophecy foretold, Aino is now working on her own series for Jump called Anima. Sasaki is disheartened that Aino is still on the path towards her death, but proud of his good friend and assistant for making it this far as a mangaka. The rivals shake hands one more time as their competition for the top spot of Jump begins. By chapter 10, all of these brand spanking new mysteries begin to unravel just as quickly as they were set up. And this really begins with a flashback chapter of Aino's childhood, where we learn a little bit about how Aino, with the guidance of a strange old manga seller, fell in love with manga as a way to escape the struggles of being a socially awkward child. This flashback then transitions into a flash forward of the events to come. Anima becomes an even greater success than White Knight, but at the expense of Aino's health, as she attempts to take on the rigorous Shonen Jump schedule without the help of assistants. These are the two dumbest main characters ever. Don't do this!
Like, no.
Despite her talent, Aino's obsession with creating a transparent masterpiece, a work that all of humanity can enjoy, causes her to write in a way that prioritizes the elimination of personality in her works. This manifests in an unhealthy disregard over her own health and safety, and leads to the artist's tragic death via exhaustion. This is the fate that Sasaki has failed to change. And we get a look at Aino's struggle of, I really want to make something that's just universally loved. That means I need to eliminate personality. I need to eliminate voice. Because if you have a quirky personality, you're going to, you know, put off people. I kind of love this discussion because I'm the total opposite. Like, if you have no voice to your work and you're just trying to be as universal as possible, I will not like it. Because I'm such a goddamn contrarian where, but I mean, that's the truth. Like, for me, I love having works that have a voice and are distinct and are like outside of the norm, which is why I have a podcast about canceled Shonen Jump manga. Like, it's, you know, it kind of feeds into my desire to read stuff that not a lot of people enjoy, but at least have some kind of value for me as a reader because it's unique. It's a lot of, you know, risks being taken.
Yeah, I am the exact same way. And when this came about, when it was found out that her death was a result from exhaustion because of her, like, commitment to her ideals and what she thought needed to be done, it really hit home for me, especially in this way when she does talk about how, you know, you have to have a work that everyone can enjoy, and in order to do so, you have to eliminate the personality. I felt that a lot in academia when it comes to classical music. I have degrees in music education, music performance, and a lot of times you look at older pieces you're supposed to perform, for tuba example, the Ralph Vaughan Williams Tuba Concerto, and they want to hear it in a very particular way. They want to hear it really pretty, and they want it, you know, exactly the articulations met, and just everything. And then so you go to these competitions, or you enter these, you know, concerto competitions, stuff like that, and you just hear everyone play it the same way. Exactly what's on the page. I always struggled with that because it wasn't as fun. I didn't feel like I was saying anything with it. Like, sure, maybe the first couple people who recorded it and it made a big waves way back when, that's great. That was their voice. That was their interpretation of that art. but maybe I'm going to do something a little bit different in the cadenza. Maybe I'm going to slow down this one part and speed up this other part. Maybe that's what I want to say. And maybe it's not going to reach out to everyone, but it's going to reach out to someone. So when I saw this, this was the same kind of push and pull that I saw with a performance of classical music.
I had the exact same experience in my adolescence with choir. I used to love singing because singing is fun and performing is fun. And now I'm trying to do the best to like improve my singing, and I have to adhere to this like rule set that no longer makes singing fun, but in exchange I get like people say like, oh, I sound great, and it's just like, no, I sound great and I feel terrible.
Yeah,
I don't think that's the point of music, and I don't think that's the point of creation.
Exactly.
To create something that makes you feel like garbage. So,
and if you're working that hard to get this crazy ideal, you'll literally, like in Aino's case, work yourself to death.
Yeah.
It's not an attainable goal.
Have your flourishes. Have your voice be heard. Sing in falsetto. Do karaoke. I don't give a shit. Just do what makes you feel good and, you know, fuck the rest. And this is a really cool kind of depiction of what that rabbit hole of trying to attain the global, like, perfect art can lead. We then get Sasaki's perspective on these events. Much like Aino, Sasaki put everything he had into making White Knight as good as possible, even after running out of future chapters to rip off. Unfortunately, it's clear that Sasaki simply can't catch up to Aino's talent. Eventually, a sleep-deprived and malnourished Sasaki gets the phone call he was dreading most. He learns from Muneoka that Aino has passed away. The sobbing and unhinged mangaka immediately runs to the time machine, demanding answers. Why didn't you tell me she dies of exhaustion? Sasaki screams out. Why did you tell me to beat Anima? It makes no sense! The time machine responds to Sasaki's desperate cries with a spectacle of lightning and iron sand swirling into the shape of a portal. Without saying a word, Sasaki gets absorbed into the machine and finds himself in a sterile white pocket dimension, with the toy robot that sat atop the time machine now sitting across from him. Did you expect time portal crack in the space-time continuum type bullshit in this series? Because I did not.
I mean, with anything with time travel, I usually expect it to go kind of wonky or wild or cool at some point. I didn't expect this to happen. I didn't really think we were going to get a whole, like, you know, towards the last couple episodes of Evangelion where we're just having, like, very deep discussions about life and how who we are as a person and why shit sucks and why we suck. Like, I wasn't expecting that.
With three chapters left in the series, the now sentient toy robot and Sasaki discuss nearly every single plot point left to explore in the series. Why was Sasaki told to draw White Knight and defeat Anima? Because every other way of saving Aino had failed. The only thing left to try was crushing her dreams by creating the transparent masterpiece that she sought to create before she could have the chance to.
That's fucking brutal.
They're very blunt about it. It's just like, I gotta save her life by destroying her dreams. And even Sasaki's like, is that even, like, worth it? Like, yeah, that's kind of a brutal way to save somebody.
Yeah, we're here to crush her dreams, and you know what? I picked you to do it. Fuck you.
Yeah, you're going to get punished for your sins, but they're sins that I'm forcing you to commit. Like, I'm forcing you to plagiarize and fall into this space-time continuum despair state.
You know I'm really OP as a microwave, all sentient light, microwave life form, but, you know, you have to do all this. It's on you.
You clean up the mess.
And I'm going to punish you for it anyway. Fuck you.
I'm also not a big fan, and I'm not going to delve too deep into it, but they basically say, okay, why did crushing dreams, like, why is that the plan? And the time machine robot goes, well, I tried everything else. I tried to send her to therapy. I tried to get her medicated. I tried to keep her out of things that would trigger her, and they don't work. So we're going for dream crushing. I'm like, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But as the toy robot laments, even that plan seems doomed to fail. With no other options left, the emotionally attached robot lays out his final plan, stopping the flow of time 5 days before Aino's death and just leaving it be. Sasaki completely disagrees with the plan, saying that Aino, along with everyone else in existence, might as well be dead in that case. Sasaki is correct. After much deliberation, Sasaki comes up with a better option. Freezing time and allowing Sasaki free movement in order to create the transparent masterpiece on his own. The robot warns Sasaki that putting this new plan into effect could break his mind, but Sasaki is willing to take the risk. And with that, the pocket dimension begins to fade away, and the two strangers, connected solely by the drive to save Aino, share their goodbyes. This is the worst time machine ever.
Yeah, this is really kind of strange. Like, the time machine does the thing that when you're programming, like, AI to learn, like, very simple video games like Mario. I can't remember if it was that or, like, Missile Command, where an AI fucked up. It was going to die, and it's programmed to know that dying in the game is, like, the worst thing you could do. So it did that. It paused the game and just left it paused, because I can't lose if I don't play.
It's okay, because we've found a loophole so that, like, okay. You have unlimited time now. Make the greatest manga ever with no consequences. So no, just a power fantasy for every single manga author on the planet. Sasaki awakes to find himself in a world completely frozen in time, 5 days before Aino's death. The plan is to complete the entirety of White Knight all on his own and polish it until it's a perfect manga. With the help of infinite time and the unintentional side effect of never experiencing hunger, thirst, or fatigue, Sasaki spends what is essentially an eternity writing manga, doing research, and improving on his art.
I would just imagine if I wanted to create the best song of my ability, I would have to not only work on it, work on my craft and get better just doing, you know, practicing drills, strengthening the foundations and all that kind of stuff. But then I feel like I would have to listen to, like, everything. I'd have to listen to everything. I'd have to go, like, travel and experience things to get inspiration from multiple different facets to be able to put together an art of that magnitude.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I actually love that that's exactly what Sasaki does at a certain point. Is he basically goes through a first draft of this completed series, says, okay, I can do a little better. Does a second draft, I feel like I'm plateauing. So you know what? I'm going to go to the library and read up on history and read up on other stories and read up on philosophy. Although the one question I have, and I'm sad that they didn't have this panel, is he goes to the library and, like, learns about history and whatnot. They needed to have one where he has a stack of the how to draw anime books you get at the arts craft store.
Yeah.
It was just like the terrible art. Just like, I'm gonna do good. I got this.
I have a couple of those books.
Do you?
I do.
I laugh at him, everyone. Oh my God.
And like,
no,
school,
actually, listen, they're... listen. It's actually good for you. Always reach for your dreams and try to be better, even through the cheesy how to draw better art books.
Exactly.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for admitting that. I think that's one of the more embarrassing things to admit. But hey, you know, we're wholesome as shit here. Good for you.
Yeah, I'll own up to that. It helped me. I mean, it got him when I was a kid, and hell, I mean, I drew a fuck ton all thanks to that kind of stuff. So you gotta start somewhere.
How much do you charge for commissions?
for art, none. I haven't drawn in forever.
Damn. No slots are ever open.
Nope.
Fuck me.
No.
We don't know how long Sasaki stays in this time freeze state, just that he loses count after 1,472 days and 18 different drafts of the full series. With each completed draft, Sasaki thinks on what can be added, what can be improved. This allows the lonely mangaka to think on what it is that made him want to draw manga in the first place. It wasn't to prevent Aino's death or to become a star mangaka, it was to speak to people. And right now, he has something important to say to Aino through the medium of manga.
All right, that's a very, like, wholesome and impressive conclusion to come to. Like, he finally found what he wants to say, and it kind of harkens back to the advice that the asshole editor gave him at the very beginning.
It's actually funny thinking back on it, because the asshole editor at the beginning that was supposed to be like, yeah, you dumb shit, he was right. He was completely right about what he needed to do to be a better writer. He was right all along. Kakuse did nothing wrong. After finishing a draft he's finally happy with, Sasaki restarts the flow of time and hopes for the best. With bags of manga in hand, Sasaki knocks at Aino's door. Aino initially dismisses the appearance, telling her rival that she's too busy to speak. But her curiosity is piqued when Sasaki declares that he's written something better than anima. Sasaki leaves the massive stack of manga at her doorstep before returning to his apartment. Fortunately, Aino is unable to resist the temptation and begins reading. Now Sasaki can only wait to see what her reaction is. He doesn't have to wait for long, however, as his apartment fills with the sound of doorbell spamming. An out-of-breath Aino makes her thoughts on the series clear. It's a genuine motherfucking masterpiece that all of humanity can enjoy. But most importantly, the plan worked. Aino admits that there is no possible way for her to create something as amazing as White Knight. Sasaki is relieved to hear it, but corrects Aino on one little tidbit. Sasaki wrote White Knight specifically for Aino, not for humanity. This confuses Aino, but Sasaki explains that there is no way to write something that all of humanity can enjoy. And what's wrong with that, he asks. To him, all that matters is that someone else, anyone out there, can enjoy it. Aino can feel a great weight lifted off of her after hearing those words from the person she respects most. The two artists eventually come to the agreement that the joy of writing manga, for them, comes from the joy of bringing something to life through ink and paper. And it is that joy that guides them towards their future as well. We get one last look 10 years in the future. Both Sasaki and Aino, with smiles across their faces, are drawing the manga that brings them joy. And so ends Time Paradox Ghost Rider.
What a really cute ending.
It's a very cute final chapter. Just like, after having the stakes be so high to end the series, I'm just like, we're going to have just a cute conversation, which like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I should take better care of myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, you did a good job with this manga. Thanks. I did it for you. Aw, how nice. Like, it's weird.
Right.
But I appreciate it because, you know what? It's actually a nice message for creators like you and me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, leaving it with the whole be good to yourself, treat yourself right, and also, you know, write, create the things that you want to create and that you enjoy creating.
I actually think that's, like, a moral that I personally can actually learn something from because I know that I've had a lot of moments with this podcast alone where I'm like, I don't want to delay an episode, but God, I have to. I beat myself up over it, but at the end of the day, I do this podcast because I enjoy it, and I have people in my life that tell me, like, this is fun to listen to.
Yeah.
And if those are the only people I hear from, that's enough for me. So I don't have to set the standards as, oh, I have to compete with the algorithm if we're off for a week or we'll never recover. Like, there are moments where I get kind of taken in by that whole get the numbers and get the algorithm to work for you and that it kind of ruins the fun of creating stuff. So I think now more than ever, where so much of content creation is based around getting numbers and getting follows and getting, you know, having a story in Shonen Jump be about it's okay if you don't get all the success in the world so long as somebody else enjoys it. And it means a lot more coming from a manga that did get canceled whatever reason. So, you know, it's nice to have an uplifting chapter at the end where at the end of the day, bad stuff happens, but if somebody out there enjoys it, then it was of value. It's interesting because on a purely media criticism standpoint, there's definitely a lot more here you can learn in regards to mistakes than from successes. But this is a series that has, weirdly enough, a really good voice to it that overcomes those mistakes and makes for a fun experience.
I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed the themes that he was going for, the inner struggles of dealing with plagiarism, dealing with guilt, dealing with wanting to appease everyone, dealing with wanting to create and put out your creation and have it be liked and have it be successful. All these things are very approachable, especially to a Western market. And I see why this caught on very well, especially with our culture. And you, as you see people, Twitch streamers, podcasters, everyone wanting to do their thing, make a living doing it, and have a great time. So I can see where the core values and the core themes of this really stuck with the Western audience. It is unfortunate that it was cut short in the way that it is. But, that being said, I'm still not dissatisfied. This is probably the first manga we have read so far that has a complete story in a way that I'm satisfied with, and that I would still like to have as a complete little thing for what it was.
my rating is going to be a bit of a contrast compared to what my answer will be if you ask me, should I read this series? I think you should read this series. But in terms of composition, in terms of what I would like to see in a story, there are enough flaws in it that I would feel bad about saying, oh, it's an 8, oh, it's a 9. Despite the fact that I feel like you should approach this manga as if it were an 8 or a 9 and have the same kind of excitement to read it. But in terms of composition, in terms of how I feel it compares to other series that have just as much heart and have just as much to say, but do so with a greater ability than the series author demonstrates in Time Paradox Ghost Rider. In comparison to those, I would say that this is, man, I'm leaning between 6 and 7. What am I thinking here? I want to say 7. I think this is a perfectly good series to read if you're a creator. I think it's a perfectly good series to read if you are a fan of Scott Pilgrim-esque flawed characters that try to bumble their way towards redemption. If you are somebody that is very creator-driven, artistically driven, I think there's a really great message to the series that you don't see a lot of in Shonen Jump.
I very much enjoyed this one. I really hope that Tsunehiro Date does more, and I hope he does get that hit.
Because that's one thing we didn't mention. That's one thing we didn't mention. The art is really, really good. This is somebody that knows how to get a lot out of facial expressions, get a lot out of what is essentially a very drama. Like, you know, there's some sci-fi elements, there's lightning, there's iron sand and all that. But for the most part, all of the really strong points in the series come from just facial expressions. And the art really serves the story exceptionally well.
But no, I totally agree with all that for the art. The art is fantastic. Tsunehiro Date with the art just really knocked it out of the park. Like you said, expressions, emotion behind it so well. And I think it's super well paired up alongside with the emotional, psychological, and sci-fi turmoil that Kenji Ichima wrote. You know, this was something very personal. He obviously had something to say, and I'm glad that he found an artist that helped him say it. I found myself relating to this manga in terms of a lot of the struggles the characters went through and what was the end-all be-all, this is what I want you to be left with in terms of how you approach your craft. It is one of the few that we've read that I feel like had any semblance of a satisfying conclusion. And I know they're all dealing with just the cards they have in their hand at the time. But I felt like this was done really well. Yes, there's a lot of issues in terms of you really try to be nitpicky with certain things that start not to line up. Or you start wondering about things that should have been considered by a character or two. But you can really put a lot of that aside when you buy into what's happening at those characters at the time. I feel like this would be a pretty interesting read from week to week if I was waiting for it. So when rating this, I have to think of this as not only as a package as a whole of what it was, but also what the experience could have been reading it week to week. And all things considered, this one spoke to me quite a bit. And this one is a hard one for me to place because I also want to put it somewhere between 6 and 8 in those three number range. And I know I tend to rate some of these more high, but for me, I think I would firmly put this one as an 8 as well. I think this is absolutely something you should go read. This is especially if you're the creative type, if you're someone who is trying to put out content creation and want a nice story to listen to and relate to in those terms. I think this is a great read. It's sad to see it go.
Like, I think more than any other series, I think a lot about there are good series on this program. There are good series that were canceled in Jump that I feel bad were canceled. But reading this series, this is one of the few that I feel good it was printed. I'm very happy about the fact that this was a story that got to be told to some capacity. It wasn't perfect. There's always room for improvement. But this was something that I think I will kind of always look to this as a quick little thing I can read to remind myself, hey, calm it down, all right? You don't have to create masterpieces. You can just do something that makes you happy. That gets me.
Mm-hmm.
You get points for that. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Shonen Fiasco show. We are on Spotify. We are on iTunes. We are trying to set up a YouTube with uploads, with highlights, and hopefully some more content from there. But for now, check us out on wherever you get your podcasts.
But also make sure to talk to us on Twitter at ShonenFiasco.
You say it. You try to say it at the same time. My bad.
It's okay. At ShonenFiasco. The music for this episode pitch comes to you from The Game Brass. We are a classically trained video game music brass quintet, and we had just finished releasing our third feature-length album, Brassino Isles Tropical Cruise. 50 collaborators, tons, 16 tracks from a bunch of different games.
Please, please check out The Game Brass wherever you pick up your albums. Next episode, giving y'all a heads up on what we're doing. Here's the thing. Taite Kubo's back, y'all. The creator of Bleach. What? Coming in hot with Burn the Witch, and we're going to go ahead and do something special to commemorate him. So we are going to be reviewing Zombie Powder.
Oh.
Thank you so much for listening to the Shonen Fiasco show. I am Adam Tetramore.
And I am Alex Hill.
Be sure to read everything.
You dare speak of this manga in that tone of voice?